Welcome to the Food and Farming podcast from AHDB, keeping levy payers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
With the UK government's plan to replace single farm payments with new sustainable farming incentives, the environment will become central to all farms over the next few years. With this in mind, it's a good idea to make the environment a primary focus area within your business plan. I'm James Haig, Knowledge Exchange Manager for AHDB Dairy. And today I'm joined by Rory Martin, Farm Director at Myersco College in Lancashire, who is part of our Strategic Dairy Farm Programme, to learn more about how he's working to improve his soil health to produce as much energy and protein as possible for feed, but also encourage carbon sequestration. Welcome, Rory. Thanks for joining me today. For those listening, could you tell us a bit about yourself and the farm at Myersco College?
Morning, James. Yeah, thanks for having me. So we're farming at Myersco College. We're just down the road from the main campus. We have three farms, all rented from the Duchy of Lancaster and all in a ring fence. So we're farming around about 800 acres. We have a 200 cow all year round calving dairy herd. We lamb about 1,200 sheep. We have 50 cow suckler herd, finishing around 200 head of beef a year. And we grow about 100 acres of cropping. And then on top of that, we've students on site 5 days a week most of the year.
Great. And just give us a bit of background into how the farm was managed before you took over as farm manager and what your vision is to encompass all of the enterprises of the farm into one.
So historically, we've been as we are at the farm here with the three farms that we have since around 2001. Prior to that, we had a hill farm separate. We had a heifer rearing unit elsewhere. We had another dairy herd somewhere else. So everything was sort of amalgamated onto the one site around 2001, but still had a bit of a mentality of it was three separate farms. So we had an arable unit that operated on about 200 acres. I think we'd a beef and sheep unit, and then we'd a dairy unit. And although they're touching and everything was in a ring fence, they more or less operated independently with a bit of machinery share, a little bit of staff sharing. But, you know, the sheep and beef never left Lee Farm, the dairy never left Lodge Farm, and the arable never left Lightash Farm. Since I've started here about 2.5 years ago, we've started moving away from that to more of a one-farm, multi-enterprise approach, farming all 800 acres as one block, if you will. So with that historic farming management, we've kind of the same issues in the arable ground as you might get on big arable estates on the East Coast, you know, compaction and reduction in organic matters. Same with beef and sheep ground, it's permanent pasture with some surface level compaction from sheep and really high organic matters. So we're trying to make use of the whole estate and rotate the cropping round, rotate the livestock enterprises round, and just try and get more of a synergistic relationship between each of the enterprises and get them all working together to get production efficiencies, input efficiencies, make use of the waste products from the cattle enterprises to feed into the stock enterprises, but also use the cropping to address soil index issues or compaction issues or whatever it might be on some of the pastures and the silage ground. So very much a one farm management approach, which gets a bit complicated and requires a lot of knowledge and a lot of input from advisors and institutions like AHDB that can give us best practice advice in the areas that I might be slightly weaker on just because my background's in a different area, I suppose.
And why is it that you think soil health is so important?
Well, for me, soil's where everything starts. So, you know, we take a dairy enterprise, for example, to get healthy cows with good yields, good fertility, that relies on the nutrition. Well, the biggest part of the nutrition in our system is the forage. Well, the biggest part of good forage production is having good soils, healthy soils. We're going through a big reseeding policy at the minute. Currently we're cutting 200 acres 3 times to get the silage requirements that we need. We're hoping that we can move with dressing compaction issues, nutrition issues within the soil, and then just putting in better lays. We're hoping we can move to cutting 150 acres 4 times to get the same quantity but better quality. And for me, it's pointless spending money on new grass lays, on fertilizer, especially the prices we're at the moment. And inputting slurries and box muck onto the ground if you've got a compaction issue that's going to stop the grass from growing, or you've got, we have on some of the grounds, some of the permanent pasture grounds, really high phosphorus indexes, which are locking up the magnesium and causing grass staggers in our suckler cows all year round. Well, it's pointless putting more slurry or box muck on there because we're just exacerbating the problem. But we don't know that unless we soil sample, unless we start working with what we've got, understanding better what we've got, and then moving the inputs that we have in terms of the enterprises that we do around the estate into the best place for them, that they're going to gain the best inputs and their waste products will do us some good. So like I said before, we've moved away from growing the arable all on light ash farm and moved some of it to the permanent pasture at Lee, because that wheat crop will soak up a lot of that phosphorus that's outstanding, and when it goes back to grass we won't have the same staggers issues, we won't have to be getting cattle in and bolusing them once a month, which is obviously causes a bit of stress, and we've had poor pregnancy outcomes in the suckler cows as a result.
I know that it's something that you've been focusing on for a while, and last September we ran an on-farm meeting with you at Myersco College with independent grassland consultant Dr. George Fisher, where we were looking at managing soils for a sustainable future. But what were the key messages that you took away from that day?
Yeah, so that was a really, really interesting, really useful day with George. I've never met him before. He's a fantastic character, and he's really, really knowledgeable. And for me, one of the key messages I took away from that is that the soil is as complicated a management area as anything else on the farm. And we've different levels of compaction depending on the previous history of that ground. And just having George there and having the AHDB resources around compaction and the little check sheet that we took out, laminated into the field, and just digging a test pit in the field and working out what's there in that soil. Is, you know, how deep is the compaction? How widespread is it? Is it surface compaction in the top 1 or 2 inches that's come from grazing sheep on wet ground over winter, or waterlogging, in which case we can just run through with our aerator, our spiker, and that'll open the soil up a bit, let the oxygen get to the grassroots, and we'll get a bit of an earlier flush of grass and allow those grassroots to dig in and start to break that up a bit more. Or is it a bit deeper? Is it maybe 3 or 4 inches that's come from cattle compaction, or, you know, tractors driving across the silage grounds, in which case might need to get a bit deeper. That's where we tend to use the plough, and we'll, some of the permanent pastures, the grazing ground or old silage lays, we'll plough it up, get the plough underneath that compacted layer and turn it over, get a much better crop outcome, whether we're ploughing for a grass reseed or putting a wheat crop in to go through our rotation. Or if it's on some of the arable grounds and we've dug down and it's a plough pan at, you know, sort of six, 8 inches, well, we've a sward lifter, a grassland subsoiler that we'll get into those fields and pull that through. And it's, the learning I took from George was to assess what we've got and then use the right tool to rectify that. We could just say, oh, this field's compacted, we'll go straight for the big guns and get the sward lifter through it and do a really deep sward lift, and that'll just pull through any compaction, whatever layer it is, it doesn't matter. Well, it can actually cause more harm than good. If we get very wet in winter here, but we can get very dry in summer, and if we've pulled a sward lifter through and opened the soil structure right up, we run the risk of causing drought, because you make the fields bottomless in farmer speak, and they just never hold any water. And I have seen instances of where sward lifted at the wrong time of year or in the wrong conditions, and we've, you know, burnt off grass lays, because where we haven't subsoiled is fine, where we have it doesn't hold any water anymore, and we've burnt it off like we're in a drought situation. So a bit of knowledge is dangerous, I suppose.
And just putting those learnings into practice, have you made any changes following the meeting, and have you seen any impact that it's had yet?
Yeah, I suppose we've just put into practice exactly what I've just been talking about, and learning that the window for subsoiling or any of these remedial works is the soil moisture has to be correct. So not doing tractor operations when we can, but doing them when the situation is right or the conditions are right, and not causing harm while trying to do good. And yeah, it'll be a 30-acre field that's been in cereals for the last 3 years now, that It was at the stage of the rotation where it would be going back to grass, but we still had a fair bit of compaction knocking about, issues of a bit of water logging, and we just wouldn't have had a good grass lay if we put it in at that time. So we chose to put it into another year of cereals, which could possibly compromise the cereal yield we could get, but it gave us time to address the compaction issues that we've had. I basically think what's happened is that there was a drain wrong, which we rectified, but it took a few years to get to it. And the compaction that was caused by the water sitting there just grew each year. So we pulled a chisel plow, actually, it was before we got the subsoiler, but we pulled that through, broke the surface of the ground, put another cereal crop in and let that soak some of the water and the cereal roots get down and do their work in the subsoil, let the worm populations come back. Since we'd reintroduced air into the soil, it wasn't waterlogged anymore. And what was a 30-acre field that probably had 10 acres in a corner that had always been wet that we could never get into and we'd sort of just written off, we're now back to having 30 acres of productive ground. It's got one last year of cereals to harvest out of it now, and then we'll have an extra 10 acres of silaging ground that we didn't have before, just by thinking a bit more carefully about what we're doing, digging test pits around it, assessing what level of compaction was, and going with the right tool for the job, I suppose.
Well, that's fantastic to hear, and this year more than ever it would be useful to have that extra productive land.
Oh, definitely.
Rory, I know that you're currently working on a PhD on post-Brexit UK agricultural policy. Can you just tell us a little bit more about this, please?
That's a bit of a labour of love, that. I sometimes question my sanity in starting that, but it all came about, I suppose, because I've always been reasonably interested in common agricultural policy and how it started, and just frustrations with it from a farming perspective, and why is this policy not work for us on the ground, and sort of looking back at the history of it. And for me, anyway, every policy change to the common agricultural policy has been an attempt to sort out the issues that the previous policy change created. And so I was quite interested in all the rhetoric around Brexit and creating a new UK agricultural policy and how's it going to work, and obviously all the uncertainty around ELMs and how we're going to manage when BPS starts to, once it's gone away in 2027, and kind of what will be the impacts of that change in UK government's approach to public goods. And the EU Common Agricultural Policy took a view that the farmed environment was a public good. It was worth supporting, it was worth putting money into. This government seems to be moving away from that and changing the tone slightly to, well, the environment portion of the farmed environment is what the public good is. The food production is a private good, and the market will have to support that, which will introduce a lot more volatility into the market, which we're all starting to see now with fertiliser prices and everything else that's going on the world stage, which is being exacerbated by what's going on in Russia at the moment. But I'm really interested in focusing in on what the business response to that will be. And so I'm going to be doing sort of case studies of different dairy businesses in the northwest, from a large intensive 800,000 cow unit through maybe a smaller robot unit and then probably a grazing unit, and just revisit the same farms over a number of years, talk to them, see what business plans they're making, what strategy changes they're doing. I have a sneaking suspicion that longer term, when you factor in all the 25-year environment plan priorities, clean air, clean water, biodiversity, everything else, we're going to see a shift in UK farming where we're all going to move back to some mixed farming principles in one fashion or another, whether that's a business like ours where we have some cropping and livestock together on the same unit, or whether it's more collaboration between neighbours, or, you know, neighbours in the next county or parish or whatever it might be, in terms of muck for straw swaps or making better use of the resources you have available. And I know with artificial fertiliser prices being as high as they are at the minute, we're putting a lot more work into utilising the slurries that we have more effectively, investing in precision agriculture technologies to know exactly what we're spreading and where. We're just doing some work at the minute with John Deere's Harvest Lab to get accurate real-time analysis of the slurry as we're applying it, and that's going to be important moving forward with public policy. I think that's environmentally and being more resource efficient is the only way we're going to have access to funding. I think the funding will be around environmental measures and precision farming to make your resource use more accurate. So that's kind of all my thinking amalgamated into a bit of a rambling response for you, James.
No problem. I know as well that just because you haven't got enough on your plate, Rory, you've also been carrying out some work as part of the Dairy Roadmap, which is a collaborative cross-industry approach to improve the environmental sustainability of the UK dairy sector. Why do you think the Dairy Roadmap's important, and what will it mean to farmers?
Yeah, I must be a glutton for punishment. So I think I've got AHDB to thank for getting me roped into that one. But it's a really interesting group. And for me, the Dairy Roadmap's really important for the sector because it brings together the NFU from a farmer perspective, AHDB from a sort of knowledge exchange and research perspective, and then Dairy UK from a processor representative body perspective. And it allows all the areas of the industry to get together, sit down and make a roadmap, make a plan for what we're going to do that's got buy-in from across the board and, you know, is a compromise, certainly, of everybody's priorities. And there's that old saying, isn't there, that no one's happy when a good compromise is made. But I think as long as we're all involved in the conversation and we all put our views forward and we all understand everyone else's priorities, we should be able to get to a point where we've made a plan that we can all agree to and moving forward can start to make the changes that we're going to need to make as an industry to contribute to the net zero agenda by 2050 that the government's pushing to meet the demands of our customer base, I suppose, you know, consumers that buy our products and allow our businesses to continue. But the baseline data group that I'm involved in is very much trying to get a picture of where the industry is now, draw a line in the sand for us. So this is where we know we were on this date. These are the metrics we're going to work towards. There's an ambition group which is working on, right, well, what's a realistic ambition and a date and a timeline for us to work to? And then there's a comms group which is working on, right, so how do we share these messages and how do we share best practice and the information to give people the tools to understand where they are from the baseline data group, understand where they need to get to from the ambition group, and understand the path from A to B of how we all get there as an industry together. So, you know, for me, it's really important. It sort of gives the industry the tools that we need to manage our own businesses and further the strategic goals of everybody's business, how to, you know, whatever part of the industry you're involved in and whatever ambition level you have personally and professionally.
We will watch with interest the progress that you and the team make. So thank you for that. Finally, Rory, what plans do you have for the future at Myersco College?
Many and varied. I sort of say to staff and students and everyone that sort of gets involved in this business, we have three strategic priorities as a farm team. So sort of first and foremost for that is the students and their learning experience and facilitating the next generation of farmers. And as a way of doing that, or as a support to that, we are run as a commercial unit and we have our own bottom line targets like any other business. We're not a show farm, not everything's brand new and shiny around here. And we try and make a decent profit to partially subsidise the extra staffing that we'll carry, which is involved in the teaching. But I've always felt it's a college's place and a college farm's place to try new technologies, new techniques and evaluate them on the systems that we run and then pass that knowledge back out into the industry and to show what works, but almost more importantly for me, show what doesn't work and the reasons why we didn't think it worked in this context. And so pass that learning out to the industry so that people don't waste money, but, you know, have more information for the investment decisions that they're going to make. And then running alongside that, we do commercial research. We sort of sit between Blue Sky University's innovation, give them a real world context to test things on. And then we work with R&D for different companies to give them a bit of scientific rigor and independence for testing new products or gaining marketing material, things like that. So we're working towards all three of those aspects all the time. For me, sort of short to medium term, it's getting all of the soils Right. Harmonising the organic matter across the platform. So I mentioned before the arable grounds of low organic matters from years of taking crop off and not putting anything back on. And we've got some permanent pastures that are really, really high in organic matter and really holding on to a lot of water and a lot of nutrients and causing us staggers and things like that, like I mentioned. So just moving the crop rotations, the livestock enterprises around the platform. We've put the old arable soils down to grass and we're grazing sheep, putting a lot of slurry on to build the organic matters up. We're ploughing up some of the permanent pastures, putting 25 tonne a hectare of box muck back on while we're doing that to try and mitigate any carbon losses that we're seeing, getting better crops from lower inputs on those soils, investing in precision technology like the Harvest Lab. We've mapped the soils, we're spreading slurry with GPS and NIR technology to know exactly what we're putting on metre by metre. And we reckon by doing that this year, we've probably saved ourselves about 40 tonne of fertiliser just from better use of on-farm resources, which the way the prices are going this year, that's a massive saving for us. And it's, for me, it's just getting better at that resource use efficiency and trying to run everything we do on-farm through, it's called a triple bottom line accounting methodology, but it's sustainability for me incorporates the environment, the social aspects of, you know, for me and my staff, is it better quality of life? Is it less hours? Is it an easier job? And then financially, so lots of payback periods, how does it work? And every investment decision, every forward plan we do here, I run through those three criteria. And if the decision that we eventually make is the one that ticks enough boxes in those three areas, so I suppose just carry on a bit more of the same little steps, try and get 1% improvement in 100 areas to get 100% better across the platform, I suppose.
Rory, thank you very much for your time today. It's always interesting to talk to you and fascinating to learn about your farm, and we wish you all the very best for the future. You can learn more about improving your soil health by visiting our dedicated Great Soils webpage at ahdb.org.uk/greatsoils. You can also follow Rory's strategic dairy farm journey by searching for Myersco College on the AHDB website. I'm James Haig. Thank you for listening.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.